Today on Uncommon Stories, we take a walk back in time and find out where two of the most common items we probably use every day come from. Shoes and their comfortable counterpart, socks. Think about what other meaning might be associated with the term sock. We'll find out if you're right at the end of our journey. So, we don't have shoes and socks on when we are born. And we can walk perfectly fine without shoes or socks. And doctors say if we didn't wear shoes and socks, we wouldn't have foot odor. So why do we wear shoes and socks? When did the first shoes and socks appear? And how have they changed over the years? Let's find out. The earliest known shoes were sandals made from sagebrush bark from 7,000 or 8,000 BC. And surprisingly, they were found in the Fort Rock Cave in Oregon in 1938. You'd think the oldest shoes found would be from the Middle or Far East, but sure enough, they were found right here in the U.S. The fact that they were made from bark probably means they were pretty tough, but I can't believe they were that comfortable. The oldest leather shoes were found in the Arena 1 Cave Complex in Armenia in 2008. They are believed to date back to 3500 BC. And these were complex shoes. They were made from one piece of cowhide, wrapped around the foot and laced together with a leather cord along seams at the front and back. It appears they were stuffed with plant material for more comfort and warmth. That's a pretty big jump from sandals and an impressive use of rawhide, a far more durable and longer-lasting material. The famous Jotunheimen leather shoe, discovered in the Jotunheimen Mountains in eastern Norway in 2006, date back to between 1800 and 1100 BC. It also is the oldest known article of clothing discovered in Scandinavia. Scientists believe shoes date back further than 8000 BC, but were probably made from materials that were more perishable and didn't last for people to find them thousands of years later. So that is the birth of shoes. But what have the, dare I say, strides of footwear been since then? As civilizations developed, thong sandals, the early known footwear we call flip-flops, became popular. On a side note, when my kids were young, we called flip-flops toe shoes because you could see your toes when you wore them. But back to sandals. Ancient Egyptians wore sandals as they are depicted in murals dating from 4000 BC. One pair of sandals found were made of papyrus leaves and dates back 1500 years. Sandals were also common in Jerusalem during the first century. And scientists have found numerous cultures that use sandals of one kind or another. The Maasai of Africa made rawhide sandals. In India, they were made of wood. The Chinese and Japanese used rice straw for their sandals, while South Americans used the long leaves of the sisal plant. And in Mexico, they used the yucca plant. While sandals were very popular in many parts of the world, not everyone in ancient times took to footwear. Egyptians, despite the footwear depicted in their murals, Hindus and Greeks saw little need for sandals or shoes and went barefoot most of the time. While the Egyptians and Hindus lived in warmer climates and didn't need as much protection from the elements, the Greeks viewed footwear as self-indulgent and unaesthetic. Even their gods and heroes were immortalized with barefoot statues, and the Greek hoplite warriors fought battles in bare feet. And Alexander the Great captured most of his vast empire with barefoot armies. So as helpful as sandals were to a large portion of the world, it is evident not everyone saw the need for them. But as time went by, the shoe began to evolve and make a greater presence all over the world. By the Middle Ages, a common casual shoe worn in the Pyrenees mountain range near France was the espadrille, a sandal with braided jute soles and fabric used to cover the upper portion and part of the ankle. And of course, everyone knows of the famous Dutch wooden shoes, or clogs. They also wore wooden sandals fastened with cloth or leather around the upper part of the foot. It was also during this time that a method of making a shoe came into being, and it is still used today for some types of shoes. The turn shoe method, where you construct the shoe right side out, and the sole of the shoe was joined to the upper portion by a seam. Then the shoe was turned inside out and ready to wear. By 1500, the turn shoe method was largely replaced by the welted rand method, where the upper portions are sewn to a stiffer sole from the outside of the shoe, rather than the inside. Soon after, patterns and colors were added to shoes, and heels were used for better support. And then came higher heels for women, the predecessor for the modern high-heeled shoe. Colonial times sees the emergence of specialty shoe stores, where one can order a pair of shoes to be made from a wooden or metal mold that the shoemaker or cobbler would form the shoe around and stitch it together. Here still, leather and some coarse cloth were mainly used to create the shoe. When we reach the industrial age in the 19th century, shoemaking becomes commercialized, and the shoemaker and his store and cobbler with his cobbler's bench are soon taken over by large factories, where sewing machines, developed in 1846, took the place of sewing shoes together by hand. Not long after, in 1856, a shoe stitching machine was invented by American Lyman Blake. And when it was perfected in 1864, mass-producing shoes became the norm. Leather and hard soles are still the main materials, but they can be produced for different size feet and in different styles and colors for the masses. But the shoe wasn't done with its evolution. In 1876, the rubber-soled athletic shoe was developed in the United Kingdom. The new Liverpool Rubber Company made plimsolls, or sand shoes, for croquet players. And in 1892, American Humphrey O'Sullivan created a similar athletic shoe based on Charles Goodyear's vulcanized rubber technology. The United States Rubber Company was created the same year O'Sullivan unveiled his rubber-soled athletic shoe, and they produced rubber-soled and heeled shoes and became known in 1916 as Keds. These shoes became known as sneakers, and this eventually took shoes to a whole new dimension. Leather business shoes and ladies' high heels, along with sneakers, were the everyday shoes for men, women, and kids through the mid-1900s. But in 1964, entrepreneur Phil Knight and University of Oregon track and field coach Bill Bowerman founded Nike. And the athletic shoe and everyday sneaker took another jump. Improvements including cushion insoles, waffle soles, and breathable nylon uppers became extremely popular, and sports and casual shoes would never be the same. And the fashion industry added its touch to women's shoes, especially high-heeled dress shoes, and men's leather loafers and dress shoes became more stylish. Shoes now made more statements, as well as protecting and keeping the foot comfortable. Although I don't know if I can say that about high heel shoes. Today you can find just about any type of shoe for any occasion. From dress shoes, work boots, and running shoes, to high heels, sandals, and the ever-popular sneaker, we have more shoes than we know what to do with. I bet you could go into your closet and pick out shoes you haven't even worn for years. First created to protect one's feet, shoes have come a long way. And with more scientific research and development, I bet we'll see a few more steps in the advancement of the shoe. Now that we have something to wear on our feet to look good, make a statement, protect and enhance our athletic skills, what do we wear to keep our feet comfortable while wearing shoes? As mentioned in the story of the shoe, first shoe wearers would stuff plant material and fur from animals into the shoe to give comfort and warmth. that is not what we think of when we use the term sock. The word sock comes from the ancient Greek word psychos, meaning light, low-heeled shoe. Although today there is a big difference between a sock and a shoe. The earliest socks discovered date back to 300 to 500 and were found in Oxyrhynchus on the Nile in Egypt. They are split-toe socks and basically made people's feet look like a penguin's, but they were designed that way for use with sandals. They are made with fabric and created using the null-binding method, which predates knitting and crochet. Many socks created soon after were often made from animal skins and tied around the ankles. And the Greeks in the 8th century BC wore socks called poloi, which were made from matted animal hair. The Romans wrapped their feet with leather or woven fabric, and around the 2nd century AD, Romans sewed fabrics together to make fitted socks called udones. And by the 5th century AD, putties were worn by holy people in Europe to symbolize purity. One inventive sock from 12th century Egypt was made of cotton, and the sole of the sock was sewn onto the upper portion of the sock. Thus, when the sole wore out, you could replace it and stitch on a new sole, keeping the upper portion of the sock and saving on material. I don't think I would have thought of doing that. The Middle Ages saw socks become higher up on a leg and attach or tuck under one's trousers. They were usually brightly colored cloth, becoming a fashion statement as well as a practical use to keep one's feet and lower legs warm. As elastic had not been invented, garters were placed at the top of socks to keep them from falling down. Not needed for that today, garters are still used as fashion accessories, and of course, just as a bride throws the bouquet, the groom throws the bride's garter. But I'm not sure the eligible single men are catching the garter for the same reason eligible single women are catching the bouquet. As many new inventions were first used by the wealthy throughout our history, so the sock became a symbol of wealth among the nobility in 1000 AD. But the sock eventually became part of everyday life for everyone, and many wives and mothers spent many hours knitting clothes and certainly socks for the family. When I was young, I'd watch my grandmother darn my grandfather's socks. I thought for sure she called it darning because people would say, "Darn, I've got a hole in my sock." But apparently, that's not the case. With the invention of the knitting machine in 1589, socks could be made 6 times faster than by hand, and mass production of this comfortable footwear was underway. The next big invention didn't come about until 1938, when nylon was introduced. This was the blending of two or more yarns to produce socks, and this process still continues today. With colorful, warm, fuzzy, athletic, and even decorative socks, we have plenty to choose from to keep our feet comfortable inside our protective, stylish, colorful, comfortable, and even decorative shoes. So next time you pull up your socks and slip your feet into your shoes, remember, there's a whole lot of history wrapped around your feet. Have you thought about another definition we use for the word sock? In slang, sock means to hit, punch, or deliver a heavy blow. This meaning certainly doesn't relate to the other definition, unless you sock someone with your foot while wearing a sock. But I don't see that working. Well, there we have it. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Uncommon Stories, and come back next time to listen to more interesting, surprising, thought-provoking, and entertaining stories that are true, but probably are just uncommon. I'm Brad Greer for Uncommon Stories, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for listening.